I feel like I am at home because we spent many years with this congregation, total of 18 and a half years. Our association with this congregation started in 1968. And we were down here at that time for 2.5 years, went back to Hamilton, my hometown, for 18 years, and then moved back down here for another 15 and a half years. So I do feel like that I've come back home, and I appreciate so very much all that the memories that we have of this congregation. I know that I'm going to enjoy heaven when I get there, but you know, I'm enjoying the journey. I'm enjoying the journey. 52 years we've been preaching and proclaiming the Word of God. And we've enjoyed every hour and every day of it. And we have some negative memories in some of the congregations and places that we've been. But Shelby and I have talked about Creekwood, that we cannot think of one single negative thought or memory of our association with this church. We saw it as the building here was being erected. The classrooms, the fellowship hall, all of that, everything went in peace. And we were able to enjoy this facility for a number of years. But the main thing is that we enjoy being with you people. Shelby's not here, has already been mentioned. And that, when they would say, "How are you doing today? Where's Shelby?" That's what I always say. Well, that started way back when we moved back here in 1988. After we got moved in, I met with the elders, and they said, "Well, I want you to know one thing. For 18 years, we've been trying to get Shelby back down here, and we finally talked her into it, and you just came along as excess baggage. So that's who I am." That's how they feel about Shelby. Today we want to talk about marriage. I don't know of anything that is more needed at this time in our history, because the home and marriage is certainly under attack by the liberals on every side. They are trying to destroy the home and the element that God created back in the garden. Young artists set out to paint the most beautiful picture ever painted. He couldn't decide on what it was, so he interviewed several people. He asked a young bride, "What's the most beautiful thing in all the world?" And she said, "It's got to be love." He asked a young preacher, "What's the most beautiful thing in all the world?" He said, "Well, it's got to be faith." He asked an old soldier, "What's the most beautiful thing?" And he said, "It's peace." And he went home there in a dilemma. How am I going to paint the most beautiful picture in all the world, and I can't get anybody to agree upon what it is? When he walked in, he was welcomed by his wife and children as they would. The kids hanging around his legs and welcoming him home. He felt the love that they had for him. And then he walked in and felt the faith that they had in him as a husband and as a father. And after a delicious meal, they sat down and to enjoy the evening in a very peaceful atmosphere. And he said, "Without a doubt, I have found the most beautiful thing in all the world, and that is a Christian home." A Christian home has love. A Christian home has faith. And a Christian home has peace. The nearest thing to heaven on this earth is a Christian family and a home where the husband and wife and children love each other, peaceful among each other, and then love the Lord as the King of their life. But the nearest thing to hell on this earth is an ungodly home broken by sin and iniquity, where parents bicker and quarrel and the children are abandoned to the devil and all the forces of wickedness. There are breakdowns in our home at a very rapid pace. We know that 1 out of 2 end in divorce. 3 out of 4 of the second marriages end in divorce. These are not true stats, because this does not take in consideration the people that are living together without being married. There are 320 million people in the U.S. So if you give each one of them a family of 2 children, that means we have about 80 million homes in America. But I wonder how many of those are really, really homes. A little boy, dad was a traveling salesman. For school age, his mother and he would follow the dad, and they'd live in one motel, hotel after another. He was down the lobby playing one morning, and the lady there at the desk said, "Son, don't you wish you had a home?" And just like that, he said, "Ma'am, we've got a home. We just don't have a house to put it in." How many people have got beautiful houses but no home? I ask you, do you have a home, or do you just have a house? Does the God-ordained institution called marriage have a future? Marriage is being crucified today on the cross of divorce. We are told that marriage has failed us, but that's wrong. Marriage is not failed. We have failed marriage by not living up to the godly high ideals that God intended when He made the home. When is the best time to get a divorce? Answer, before you ever get married. And that's what we're going to talk about today. You need to look before you leap. This little poem's kind of amusing, but it hits the nail on the head. Nice night in June, starshine, big moon, in park with girl, heart pound, head swirl. Me say love, she coo like a dove. Me smart, me fast, me never let a chance pass. Get hitched, me say, she say okay. Wedding bells ring, ring, honeymoon, everything. Settle down, married life, happy man, happy wife. Another night in June, stars shine, big moon, ain't happy no more. Carry baby, walk floor, wife mad, stewed, she stewed, me sad, and I'm stewed. You know, life's one big spat, nagging wife, brawling brat. I realized at last me moved too fast. Wonder how many of us can somewhat identify with others that we know that did the same thing. Marriage is like running a property line. You start here at an established point. You point the transit in a certain degree. And then if that is off just a little fraction there at the transit, it's not going to show up much right there. But the further down that goes, the wider the gap is going to be. And that's the way marriage is. It has to start off right. It's hard to end up right if it starts off wrong. Here's some questions that a woman needs to ask herself before she takes that leap into marriage. Will he be a good father to our children? What kind of influence will this man have over the children that we bring into the world? What about his home background? You know, you marry the entire family. You may think you don't, but you do. You marry the entire family. Is he lazy? Will he work? Will he support us? Do circumstances change his convictions? Does he stay with the job until it's finished? Can he handle money? Does he keep his word? Will he respect the vows? Does he respect his parents? Is he a true Christian? And then there's questions that the man needs to ask himself before he takes that big leap. Is she morally good? Is she pure? Is she virtuous? Can she truly wear a white gown, wedding gown? Does she have true feminine modesty and virtues? What about her appearance? What kind of people does she attract? Who are her closest friends? Does she love children? How well does she honor and respect and obey her parents? Is she trustworthy? Will she keep her word? Will she keep the vows that we have made or will make in marriage? Yes, the best time to get a divorce is before you get married. A lady came to me one day. She said, I need help. Our marriage is falling apart. He drinks. He beats me. He beats on the children. He curses me. We have no money. He squanders it on alcohol and who knows what else. And I asked her, did he do that before you married him? She said, yes. I said, is he a Christian? No, but he promised to become one. Young ladies, listen to me. That boy will promise you the moon just to get a ring on your finger. You need to know more than you know about that person probably right now. A teenage girl came. She called her boyfriend with another girl. They had a big fight, and he slapped her. And I said, you mean to tell me you're going to still date somebody like that? She said, you don't understand. He is the biggest football star in our school, and every girl admires him, and they think I'm the greatest in the world because he is my boyfriend. And I said, ma'am, if you marry somebody like that, you get what you deserve. Amen? What? One more. Barbara Walters was interviewing Donny Osmond, and she said, will you ever marry outside the Mormon faith? And he said, no. She said, how can you be so sure? He said, I'll never date anyone outside the Mormon faith. Donny Osmond had been married to his wife about 40 years. They have 5 children. Donny said, I have no regrets marrying Debbie. He dropped to his knees and proposed to her for them to renew their vows in October the 10th, 2010. He was asked the secret to a happy marriage. He said, keep it real. You have to take out the selfishness and realize it's a two-way street. Debbie said, it's Donnie's laughter and humor that's the glue that keeps us happily together all these years. Donny was asked about how to keep magic in your marriage. He says, never stop dating. My wife and I still date. I call her up on the phone. I ask her out for a date. She said, well, let me check my book and see if I've got a vacancy for you. Anyway, how did you meet Debbie? She was dating my brother Jay, and I were dating a girl named Tammy. 2 weeks later, Jay and I traded girlfriends. He took Tammy, I took Debbie. We don't know what happened to Tammy. I dedicated myself to Debbie for the rest of my life. Romance is still alive and well in America, but the 50% who can't make it work fail to do that because of selfishness. And every decision I make, I ask myself, how does this affect Debbie, the children, me, and our relationship to God? And she said the same for her. And that's how we made it work. We put each other first and got rid of all the selfishness that can tear a marriage apart. Well, there are four major changes taking place in marriage today. Number one, there's a decline in understanding that leads to a lack of communication. Understanding does not mean that there will not always be differences among us. It does mean that you and your mate are able to talk, you're able to communicate. Back in our younger years, we'd been married just a short time. Shelby and I were into some squabble about something. We were pulling the silent treatment on one another, and I thought one Sunday afternoon it was sun shining, beautiful spring day. Decided, well, we're going to go out for a ride in the country. Not a word was said for several miles. And finally it came to a pasture, and there's an old mule standing out there. And I thought, well, time to open up the conversation. I said, is that some of your kin folks? She said, yes, by marriage. And everything got silent again. I learned something. I want these young people to understand this. I learned something a long time ago. Some things aren't worth arguing about. And another thing is this. If you win the argument, means that someone you love lost. And you are never a winner if your mate is a loser. You're never a winner if your mate is a loser. You know, we come from two different backgrounds. I came from a carpenter's family. My wife was a coal miner's daughter. And they just, that's about as far apart as you can get. It means that the things done in your home, your home, does not have to be done the same way that it was done in the home where you were reared. The two of you have formed a new home. It's not an extension of the old home. You find what works for you. Now, men, listen. 1 Peter 3, verse 7. Likewise, you husbands, dwell with them, that's the wife, according to knowledge, giving honor unto the wife as unto the weaker vessel, and being heirs together of the grace of life, that your prayers be not hindered. What does that say? That says that you as a husband is to study your wife. Find out what makes her happy and live up to those standards if you can. Secondly, a lack of determination, a lack of commitment to stay married. We live in a throwaway society. We throw away cups, we throw away paper plates. And many times we throw away mates. A lady is filling out an application, and on that said married or single, and she wrote in between. Between. Most of us are too impatient with their marriages. I think maybe I've told you this story before about Brother and Sister Burns over in Oxford, Alabama. I went over there on a Saturday to start a meeting there on Sunday, and then go to a civic auditorium the rest of the week. And that was to speak on the home and the family there on that Sunday morning in the church building. And I got up early the next morning. I looked, turned the television on. There's a local station, And the preacher from the Oxford congregation was the preacher, and he had five families that had been married in excess of 50 years. And he was asking them, what's your key to a happy, lasting relationship? He said to Sister Burns, said, what is your key that has kept you and Brother Burns together for 56 years? And here's what she said. She said, you've got to just grit your teeth and bear it. Everybody laughed. Old Brother Burns spoke up, said, well, she must have been gritting her teeth a lot because she's wore out three sets of dentures. And I thought to myself, how can I go to that congregation and preach a better sermon? Just like, how can I get up here and preach on giving and have a sermon better than what we saw with these kids walking up here and dropping money in the jug? I mean, she hit it right on the head. You got to grit your teeth and bear some things. Now, most don't want to live happily ever after. They want to live happy right now. You have to work on that. Marriage is like, and the home is like a house. There's constant maintenance on a house. You build a brand new house. Oh, I'm through with taking care of the maintenance. Wrong again. There's always something that's tearing up. And every appliance that you've got in your house would tear up the week after the warranty goes out. We know that. It's maintenance always. Thirdly, there's an unreal expectation of marriage based upon selfishness. One young man said, I want my marriage to fulfill all of my desires. I need security. I need someone to take care of me. I need intellectual stimulation, economic security, immediately. Look at the selfish attitude in that. You know, people are looking for something magical. They're looking for something magical. But marriage is really like those two rivers. A river here and a river here. Everything is so calm and peaceful. But when those rivers merge together, then there's ripples. I mean, it gets dangerous right there. But if they stay with that and they go on down where the two becomes one, that one smooths out again. But it's in that period of that the marriage dissolves many times, most times. Do you realize that the average length of a marriage started today is 7 years and 9 months? People are jumping ship too quick. It's going to settle out. It's going to settle down if you stay with it. But if you jump ship, you know what's going to happen? You're going to be up here, everything's calm, and you're going to find somebody over here that things calm, and you're going to get married again, and guess what? You've got the same problems that you had first, but you've got to work through those. You've got to work through those problems. You know, the definition for marriage really comes like a dime a dozen. Marriage is a necessary evil, someone says. I like this one. Marriage is like cages. Those on the outside despair to get in, and those on the inside are despairing to get out. You know, marriage has today, they put escape clauses, not on paper, but I'm gonna live with him, or I'm going to live with her if. And they start putting stipulations on what's going to keep us together. Marriage vows must be taken seriously. Listen to what the Old Testament says about vows. Numbers chapter 30, verse 2. If a man vow a vow unto the Lord, or swear an oath to bind his soul with a bond, he shall not break his word. He shall do according to all that proceedeth out of his mouth. If a woman also vow a vow in the Lord, and bind herself by a bond, being in her father's house in her youth, and her father hear her vow, and her bond wherewith she shall be bound her soul, and her father shall hold his peace at her, then all of her vows shall stand, and every bond wherewith she had bound her soul shall stand. That's how God looks upon vows. Now listen. Your wedding vow was something similar to this one. In the presence of God and these witnesses, I take thee to be my lawful wedded wife, husband, to live together after the ordinance of God in the holy estate of matrimony, to love and honor, cherish and protect thee in health and in sickness, in adversity and prosperity, and forsaking all others, I pledge my love to you and to you alone until death do us part. You made that vow. You made it but to your mate. You made it to the audience. You made it to God. Those vows are meaningful. It's the responsibility of the husband is to love and honor and cherish his wife, to provide and protect his wife, to care for her in sickness, to do good to her in prosperity and adversity, to forsake all other women, and love her as long as you both shall live. Responsibility of the wife to the husband is to love and honor and cherish and respect her husband, protect him and her husband, care for him in sickness, be good to him in prosperity, obey him in the Lord. Obey him in the Lord. The Lord took care of that way back in the book of Genesis. Thy desire shall be thy husband, and he shall have the overseer of you. Here's a little cliche that you can remember. No two people can ride up front on the same horse. You get that? Somebody has to be in the lead. And God put the man in that side of oversight. You must love him as long as you both shall live. God's original plan for marriage goes back to Genesis chapter 3, where he brought man and woman together and said, therefore shall a man leave his father and mother and cleave to his wife, and they shall be one flesh. What is God's plan? God's plan is it's to be permanent. The two become one. Two hearts beating as one. Two people living to complement the other. It is monogamous. That is one man, one woman for life. Not one man or five wives. Or in the case of the Samaritan woman, five husbands and a live-in boyfriend. Is to be heterosexual, man and woman. Adam and Eve, you've all heard this. Adam and Eve, not Adam and Steve. Is to be Adam and Eve, man and woman. There's the fidelity. A man and a woman is to find their sexual fulfillment in their own mate. Marriage is honorable and all, but God would judge the adulterer and the fornicator. And then it's to be permanent. A Christian marriage will never fail if both parties are committed in marriage. It takes two hands to clap. I understand that. One person cannot make the marriage last by themselves. There's one exception to that, and that is fornication. Jesus referred to that in Matthew 19, verse 9. Marriage is a total commitment of the total person for the total life. It's a covenant of responsible love and fellowship and repentance and forgiveness. Dylan and Patty Bays the time that I'm telling you about, he was a preacher at the Talladega Church of Christ in Talladega, Alabama. They won a happy marriage contest. In June of 1996, issue of the Good Housekeeping magazine, they were asking their readers to send in a little suggestion on how to make and maintain a lasting relationship. Well, the Bays had been married for 26 years. They sent theirs in, and they won over 12,000 responses. They won, and this is what they said. They said, "We gave when we wanted to receive. We served when we wanted to be served. We listened when we wanted to talk. We submitted when we wanted to rule. We forgave when we wanted to remember, and we stayed when we wanted to leave." Listen to this poem. Brother Clovis and Ola Edgeworth had been married 67 years when Sister Ola died. I knew them before I knew any of you. I preached in the congregation where they worshiped. And she loved to write poetry. And just before her death, she wrote this one to her husband. "We had our ups, we had our downs. We had our smiles, we had our frowns. But we stayed together. Storms came and winds blew. But we stayed faithful, we stayed true. We stayed together. Being happy was our thing. You'd whistle, I'd sing. We stayed together. We did not always agree, but love was there, and we could see, and we stayed together. We won't live together much longer here, but one thing we won't have to fear, we stayed together. You've been faithful, you've been true. I'm glad I lived these years with you. I'm glad we stayed together." But let's give tribute to whom tribute is due. It wasn't me, it wasn't you. Christ kept us together. That's the key to a Christian home and a Christian marriage. Before I marry anyone, I always suggest these things to them, and I'm going to do that as we end the lesson. Don't marry for wrong reasons. There are many reasons that many people get married. Marry for true love. Marry for true love. Brother Gus Nichols said before he and Matilda got married, he said, "It didn't matter where I was living in Walker County, the closest way home was by Matilda's house." In other words, he found fulfillment in her presence, and he was lonely without her. That's true love. Unrealistic expectations. There's no such thing as a Prince Charming or a Cinderella. I say to you boys that maybe think about getting married someday, after you have your date on Friday night, you're staying up pretty late, maybe you go to a movie, eat out, get up the next morning at 5 o'clock in the morning, go to her house, ring that doorbell, knock on that door urgently, and whoever comes to the door said, "I need to talk to my girlfriend." "Well, she's still in bed. I can't help it. I've got to talk to her right now." They go get her and bring her out immediately. And he sees what he's going to wake up to every morning when without the powder and paint on. He sees that. It's not a surprise anymore. He sees that. You know, immaturity. Immaturity, that's a third thing. What I'm giving you are just things I've learned over 52 years of preaching and 58 years of marriage. Immaturity, There's a power struggle for who's boss. There's a fragmentation of family living where you obligate yourself so deeply in debt that you have to spend all your time outside the house that you have no time to maintain the home. Then you ask the wrong person for advice. But here's the top four that I've learned why marriages don't make it. Immorality. Number two, drunkenness. We could add drugs to that. Number three, finances. Here's the little thing I've told you before, and I'm going to tell you again, that if the outgo is more than the income, the upkeep will be the downfall of that marriage. If you live above your means, then that can be the wedge that drives you apart. And then religion. Shelby and I fought that religious battle for 4.5 years. I lost, but I won. I became a Christian. Listen to this one. Another marriage is shattered, Lord. The divorce will be final next week. He said it was a breakdown of communication and the subtle infiltration of boredom. She said it was accumulation of things. He said she was unnecessarily preoccupied with a home and children and activities. She said he stifled her dreams, ignored her achievements. He said that he felt imprisoned, restricted, that night after night he got that old push away. She said that he was harsh and brutal and often embarrassed her in public. He said that she was critical, her attitudes contributed to his sense of inadequacy. She said that she felt lonely and unappreciated with no claim of personal liberty or identity. He said that she was swallowed up in self-pity and he refused to acknowledge her benefits. She said he was thriftless and irresponsible. He said that she didn't understand. She said he didn't care. Lord, how tragic that through all those wearisome years, neither of them asked what you said. It takes two to make the marriage, but it takes three to keep it together. Do you have Christ in your life today? Do you have Christ in your marriage today? Is Christ the ruler of your home? Do both of you look to Him for your guidance? If you're here this morning, not a child of God, with faith in Jesus, repentance of sins, confessing His sweet name, and baptism into Christ, we can unite your family. The greatest gift that you could ever give your mate on Valentine's Day is not a card or roses or candy, but it's Christ. Unite that home. That's the greatest gift that you could ever give. As together we stand and sing.